Before the whirlwind, he was just one guy. One powerful guy, to be sure, but just one guy, nevertheless. Before the whirlwind, he was limited. He could bend kings to the will of God. He could make sinners tremble with just his words. He could bring fire down from the heavens. He could multiply food and feed entire households. He could control the weather. He could bring you back from the dead. But he could only be in one place at a time. Before the whirlwind, Elijah was the most powerful prophet the world had ever seen. But still, he was only one man, even if he did have the Spirit of God on him. And there's only so much one man with one body can do. Then came the whirlwind. Then came the day that he knew everything would change. And so he made that farewell tour of the holy places. He went to Bethel, where Jacob had met God, and he went to Jericho, where the Israelites had crossed the Jordan into the Promised Land. And he gave in, and he brought Elisha with him down to the Jordan, and he rolled up that cloak, and just like Moses at the Red Sea, he parted the waters and stepped through dry shod. And then came the whirlwind. And he went straight up. He didn't die. He just ascended. He went straight up, accompanied by those chariots of fire. And do you know what happened to him then? The story doesn't say, but here's what I think. He used to be just one man with just one body. Before the whirlwind, he could only ever be in one place at one time. If he wanted to heal you, he had to touch you. If he wanted to smite you, he had to be able to see you. If he wanted to feed you, he had to come in your house. But after the whirlwind, Elijah was everywhere. Somehow that whirlwind of God took Elijah and dispersed him everywhere. Before the whirlwind, he was just some prophet in some tiny little people in a tiny little corner of the world no one had heard of. After the whirlwind, there's not a place you can go on the planet where someone hasn't heard of Elijah. The Jews tell his story. They leave that cup out for him on the Passover table in case he returns. The Christians tell his story, and they tell how he met with Jesus and Moses up on top of the mountain to tell God himself how to lead a people. The Muslims revere him as a prophet. The Baha'i believe that he was reincarnated as the Bab who founded their faith. The Mormons believe he got reincarnated just to visit Joseph Smith and tell him what to do. And the list goes on and on and on. And here we are talking about him half a world away and several hundred generations later. Before the whirlwind, he was just one guy in just one place. And now he's everywhere. A word about whirlwinds. People who study storms, professionals like meteorologists and amateurs like our own associate organist and choir master, George Sargent, who just spent his vacation chasing storms across the United States. Those people will tell you that whirlwinds are real occurrences. A whirlwind happens any time a vortex of air, a whirling of air, is created by temperature gradients or by turbulence in the atmosphere. There are smaller ones like dust devils and snow devils, which are relatively small whirls of air made visible by the dirt and the snow that they pick up. Then there are the larger ones, which include, among others, waterspouts and tornadoes. A hurricane is a much larger occurrence. It's formed in a slightly different matter, but in its own huge way, it is a whirling of wind. A great huge storm, they call it a cyclonic storm system, spinning up there in the atmosphere. The Atlantic hurricane season, which will last into the fall, has just started, and meteorologists have released their projections for this year. They predict that in 2010, because of a weakening of the El Nino effect and because of extremely warm ocean surface temperatures, there will be somewhere between 14 and 23 named storms in the Atlantic, with somewhere between 8 and 14 of them getting big enough to be called hurricanes. Between 14 and 23 named storms this year, that's compared to the average 11 named storms historically. A dust devil picks up dirt and grit and scatters it a few feet or maybe several yards. A tornado can pick up a house, an entire house, and scatter it miles away. And what do you think will happen should a hurricane cross the Gulf of Mexico this summer? What do you think that hurricane will pick up in the Gulf of Mexico this summer of all summers? And just how far do you think it will be able to scatter it? Somewhere between 35,000 and 60,000 barrels every day. So far, anywhere between 80 million and 150 million gallons, and still gushing. Just to be clear, that's somewhere between 8 and 15 times as much so far as the Exxon Valdez spilled in 1989. You know, you've been watching TV and looking at the maps and the underwater cameras online. You know, God forgive us all, what a pelican covered in oil looks like. You know, God forgive us all, what tar balls on a beach look like. You have seen, God forgive us all, the fishermen with nothing safe to catch and no way to feed their children. You have seen, God forgive us all, petrochemical rainbows floating on puddles in parking lots. And you've seen those same rainbows covering the entire Gulf of Mexico. And you have thought, oh my God, what have we done? Have you been like me? Have you watched with horror and with fury? Have you raged in your heart at the oil companies for being so damn greedy? Have you wondered where the regulatory agencies were that were supposed to keep this from happening? Have you wondered why we weren't ready for this? Have you wondered why someone couldn't picture those fragile pipelines extending so many hundreds of feet through the ocean and not thought something could go wrong here? And then has your puffed up fury deflated as you asked yourself whether you actually needed to drive to church this morning or whether there was another way to get here? Have you felt that rage flowing out through your feet when you asked yourself whether you ought to be flying as much as you do? Have you found yourself staring at your shoes when you asked yourself whether you really needed fresh strawberries in Boston in December? Have you been like me? Have you been forced to ask yourself whether it would have been so profitable for BP to be so risky if you hadn't liked convenience so much? For those involved in cleaning up the oil and stopping the gusher down at the bottom of the ocean, the big problem should a hurricane blow up is the danger that it will pose to the humans working out there. Should a hurricane come, the personnel there will have to evacuate. That will mean that the boats that have been siphoning off some of the spill so far, and the boats that have been working on drilling those relief wells so far, they will have to be disconnected. And once again, the oil will flow unchecked until they come back. That will be bad. What is completely, completely unknown is what the hurricane will do to the oil that's already floating around out there. Will heavy seas carry yet more of it ashore? Will the winds and the currents drive the slick into as yet uncontaminated waters? Where will all that oil that's been treated with dispersants underwater go when the weather above roils the ocean below? Have you been like me? Have you been feeling so terrible for what's been going on in the Gulf, but so glad you live so far away? Have you been relieved that all that oil is mostly just in one place? And have you been trusting that even if it comes around Florida and makes its way up the Atlantic seaboard, it will be so diluted by the time it gets here that it will hardly matter? Have you been trusting that even though the damage down there might be bad, still it'll all be down there? Here's what scientists have been asking lately. Here's what's been keeping them up at night, staring at the ceiling all night long. Should a hurricane come through the Gulf, how much of that oil might be picked up by a major cyclonic storm system? And how far away, how far inland, maybe, might it disperse it before dropping it to the ground? Factories in the Midwest spew smoke and acid rain falls in eastern Canada. And an oil spill that used to be confined to one place, how far might a big, gigantic whirlwind manage to disperse it? And what will happen then? Never before in human history has there been even the slightest chance of oil raining from the sky. So no one knows. Good news. The oil is spilling. The 2010 hurricane season may be very bad indeed. This could all get very bad before it's over. But before any of this happened, before any of this even came close to beginning to happen, God was on it. Before there was even a chance of oil being sucked up by a whirlwind and dispersed, Elijah had already done that. The spirit and power of Elijah, which is to say the spirit and power of God, had already been sucked up into that whirlwind and had blanketed the whole earth. Where can you go? Where could that oil go that they don't know about Elijah? Where can you go that they haven't met Elijah's God? Elisha might have gotten a double portion of his spirit, but you got the rest. And you got it for just such a moment as this. Elisha inherited that double portion of Elijah's spirit. Then he did what Elijah had done, imparted those waters just to prove that he'd gotten what he had asked for. But then do you know what he did? Do you know what the very first miracle, the very first thing Elisha did with Elijah's power was? He cleaned up the water. He went to the town of Jericho and they said, "Our spring is bad and we're dying because the water is polluted. Can you help us?" And he stretched out his hand and he said, "Thus says the Lord, I have made this water wholesome, and from now on death shall not come from it." And it worked. By the power of God, he cleaned up that well, the very first thing Elisha did. Now, doesn't that sound like just the kind of task for Elijah's heirs, which is to say God's people, today? Now, I'm not saying that it's our job to clean up the gulf. This is a story about corporate greed and about irresponsibility and about failed government oversight. And those responsible should be the ones to clean it up and to pay for cleaning it up. But I am saying that sooner or later the solution will have to be that the oil companies find that oil just isn't profitable enough to be risky with anymore, because people aren't buying as much of it, because people have found other ways to power their lives. I am saying that that's going to need the kind of power that only the spirit of Elijah, which is to say the spirit of God, can give. That's in the long term. In the short term, though, the turtles are dying. No one knows where all of the oil is going, and the people of the Gulf are already suffering. And you know how these things go. You know how long the lawsuits and the negotiations and the recriminations will take. You know that the big companies never pay for everything. And you know that money is needed now. You know that the need is real and that it's pressing. So, here's a story about Elijah's spirit for you. An anonymous family here at Old South Church has come forward and has offered $15,000 to be sent to appropriate agencies in the Gulf who are working on this problem. That same family has offered to match, on top of that $15,000, any gift gathered by Old South, gathered by you, for those same efforts. To that end, the Christian Service and Outreach Committee, because they're no fools, will sponsor a special collection from you starting next week. You'll receive a communication in a few days about where exactly that money will be going and how exactly you can give. Will that money solve everything? That $15,000 plus, will it fix all the problems? Nope. It will take a lot of work and a long time, and a lot of new technology, and a whole lifestyle change. But that money's a start. That generosity is an act of hope in the future. This collection will be an act of faith and power. Do this. Look at the person to your left. Now look at the person to your right. Those anonymous donors, they could be either of those people. They could be both of those people. You'll never know. You may never ever find out who's made this offer to challenge you to greater discipleship, but you will know this. The spirit of Elijah, which is to say the spirit of God, is abroad in the world. When he left, Elijah left his mantle lying there on the ground for Elisha to pick up. And the question for us in this, as in every age, is, what are we going to leave behind for the next generation to pick up? Will it be a mantle of beauty and power and authority? Or will it be tar balls? Amen.